Jeff Calkins is a columnist at the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 9 to 11 on X. Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm good, Gabe.
Have you been able to avoid all those shootouts and everything else and gas stations being held up today? Have you been staying safe?
I have stayed safe.
Good to hear.
Glad to hear. I have stayed safe.
Yeah.
Are you referring to actual shootouts?
No, I'm referring to Stephen A. Smith and his take, man, today on First Take, of course.
Yeah, and I'm actually writing a column about it. Here's the thing. I don't actually – it is entirely possible that players have said to Stephen A. Smith, I wouldn't want to go to Memphis because it's not safe. And I want to have a lot of – and it is all – because the truth of the matter is you have to acknowledge this. We do have a crime problem,
yes,
right? We do have a crime
absolutely
problem. And we have a violent crime problem. And that is a real thing. And pretending we don't isn't at all helpful. Do I believe that any player who otherwise would have come to Memphis isn't coming for that reason? No, of course not. The truth of the matter is that if KD isn't coming to Memphis, or Giannis isn't coming to Memphis, or whatever other superstar you're talking about isn't coming to Memphis, they literally have never, would never come to Memphis because they're a small market. Memphis has never, in 25 years, Memphis has never attracted a superstar free agent because small markets don't. Memphis has also never lost a player who they wanted to keep because they were fleeing from all the stuff that, right, whatever. Like, literally every player that Memphis has wanted to re-sign, Memphis has been able to re-sign. These things have nothing to do with each other. Is it Memphis has never been a glamorous place. Once upon a time, Phil Jackson said, famously, it looks like Dresden before the war. And that was before the recent crime waves or whatever else. The problem is, of course, is that the perception becomes its own problem.
Yes.
And so for me to say, I look at the murder rates right now, the murder rate in St. Louis, the murder rate in New Orleans, the murder rate in Detroit, the murder rate in plenty of cities, roughly the same or worse than Memphis, right? That's not to say, oh, great, we fixed everything. To acknowledge that other cities have similar problems is not to absolve Memphis for its problems at all, right? But it is to raise this issue that Memphis is the only city right now that is talked about like that. And that's right. Why comments like Stephen A's and comments like Cash Patel's, honestly, 2 weeks ago, are so damaging. Reality is a problem. But the perception that Memphis is uniquely dangerous,
correct,
is equally a problem. And I will say this. It's not just Stephen A. who is guilty of spreading it. It's Memphians.
Yep.
I can't tell you how many Memphians take a glee in when Cash Patel incorrectly said Memphis is the murder capital of the country, how many were thrilled to go couldn't wait to go to Facebook or wherever else and retweet his comments. Same thing with Stephen A. Is that, like, a lot are pushing back, and I think appropriately pushing back. But so as much as people should be frustrated that this has become a totally unnecessary dialogue on ESPN, I think you should look in the mirror because it's Memphians as much as anyone else who is creating this idea that it is this uniquely dangerous. It is in the cluster of cities, New Orleans and Baltimore and Washington, D.C. and Detroit, it is in the cluster of St. Louis that is more dangerous than it should be. Now, that hasn't stopped the Detroit Lions from winning. It hasn't stopped the Commanders from winning. It has never stopped. Something has stopped New Orleans from winning, but it isn't the crime rate. So, It's a weird thing to be talking about in the context of the NBA, and it's
right.
Totally
incorrect. That's the issue. That's the issue we have, right?
Like
bringing it up when it is unnecessary to bring up, and pushing that perception onto NBA players that come to the city of Memphis. Like, it's so much easier, in my opinion, and maybe not as popular, or maybe not as, you know, thought-provoking. I can totally understand that. It's so much easier to tell the truth. There's not people lining up at the door to get into Denver or Cleveland or Minnesota or Indiana as well. You want to know why?
Right,
because
now,
it's not a glamour city.
Right.
It's not because it's unsafe. I get the sense that Jimmy Butler was like, why are you bringing me up? What the hell is this about?
Right. Oh, and Jimmy Butler in particular, like, that's because Memphis wasn't gonna give him a big contract.
And also,
I actually think Jimmy Butler might well have, if Memphis had been willing to give him the money, you know, and I got the money from Golden State. But the Jimmy Butler thing was really
Who's played in Chicago and Miami, and a guy who went to San Fran, and just to be clear about San Fran, I had to make this point, and this is not me completely saying, well, San Fran has a worse problem. That's not what I'm saying. I think any major metropolitan city faces their issues with violent crime and crime in general. But Ricky Pearsall, in this in a calendar year, in 365 days, was shot in the streets of San Fran going to lunch by a 17-year-old gunman, and you're bringing up Jimmy Butler, and, oh, he went to San Fran because it's safer than Memphis. No, we can tell the truth. He wasn't going to get an extension, and the fit in Golden State, playing alongside Steph, it was more enticing.
Yeah, I mean, it's San Francisco was recently, there was a car theft stat the other day, and it was put out by an insurance company. So it's based. It's pretty good data, you know. When it's people do like that, when their cars are stolen, they like to get money for them. And literally, I think Memphis was second, but kind of dwarfed by number one, which was San Francisco. And the Warriors do okay. By the way, the Warriors once upon a time played in Oakland. Oakland also one of the least safe. I mean, one thing now again though, like the only element of truth here is if you ask folks at St. Jude or at FedEx or at the University of Memphis or at Rhodes, how is it recruiting to Memphis these days? They will all tell you it is a problem, but they won't tell you because they don't want to talk about it. But if they were being honest, they would all tell you it is a problem, right? So I do think it's why I'm having a hard time writing the column, because you don't just want to just say, hey, this is paradise, get out of here.
Right,
because it is important that they grapple with the problem, but it is also important that you grapple with the perceptions, because it is a dangerous place, but it is not a uniquely dangerous place, and it is not in any way the reason that players aren't, you know, the superstars of the world aren't playing here. And by the way, I was just talking about this with my son Peter. It's also true that chasing superstars for big money is no longer the best way to build a team. You know, I think you could look at Minnesota, you could look at Oklahoma City, and then you look at Phoenix and you look at Brooklyn, right? And so it's just, yes, it is true. You're not going to get superstar free agents in Memphis or superstars who have control of their trade destinations in Memphis. And that's probably a good thing. I go back to the fact that Memphis has literally never signed a superstar, nor has Memphis ever lost a player who they wanted to retain.
Yep, those are both very fair points. Now, the reason it actually came up is because Desmond Bane was traded, and they were talking about, now is John Morant the next domino to fall for the Grizzlies? Are they completely blowing it up and rebuilding, which I think we can fight against those perceptions as well. I find those a little bit ridiculous. You look at the national media, I think a lot of them, I mean, they ain't batting 1,000, barely batting 200. When you look at the national media and how they've discussed this trade. But Desmond Bane was traded to the Orlando Magic for 4 unprotected first-round picks, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, and a 2030 pick swap. What I find unique about this situation is Desmond Bane was a fan favorite, did really good things around the city, did really good things on the basketball floor, was one of the best shooters we've ever seen in this city, holds multiple top 10 sort of marks in playoff threes, playoff assists, playoff points. I think he's the three-point leader ever in three-pointers made in the playoff history of the Memphis Grizzlies. But it is kind of interesting to see the fan base and their reaction to it. There hasn't been a whole lot of negativity around this move. I saw you guys put out a poll this morning on the Jeff Calkin Show. Do you approve or disapprove of the Desmond Bane trade? And 88% of the people came through and said they approve of the trade altogether. I find that pretty unique.
Yeah, I find that contrasting to be striking as well. Obviously, people like Desmond Bane, and what's not to like, you know?
Right.
You know, picked late in the first round. He's a totally rock-solid dude, right? In this sort of time of tumult in the Grizzlies franchise history, like, he was just, it felt like in the locker room, and as a member, he was a rock, you know? He was obviously a great shooter. I don't know anyone. You actually have people who will criticize Ja Morant. You'll have people who will criticize Jaren Jackson Jr. for not rebounding, and I'm talking about Grizzlies fans. I don't know anyone who didn't like Desmond Bane. He just is an incredibly likable dude, and so it is striking that everyone acknowledges that this trade looks to be something they had to do and a very good trade. I think in terms of players that they've, you know, I was thinking about this. I don't think they've, it's not a trade that they've ever, like any they've ever done before, because they've traded away good players to rebuild before, traded Powell, you know, and then when Mark and Mike reached the end and whatever. But they've rarely traded away one of their best players as they continued to hope that they were going to be good. When they traded Shane Battier for the pick, and Shane was beloved, when they traded him for the pick that became Rudy Gay, they still wanted to be good. When they traded Rudy Gay, one of their best players, that was same thing, trying to mix up the chemistry, also financial reasons for that one. So those are sort of like this, but this is it's a very different trade. And I think in the end, it came down to two things. One is people acknowledged, anyone who was sort of following this closely, acknowledged that they weren't good enough and they didn't have any avenues to get to be good enough. And then B, the Hall, pretty damn good. You know,
very
like
good.
The Hall, pretty damn good. I don't think if they had traded, like, I think if you traded the exact same package, only it had been two firsts, certainly if it had been one first, people would have complained. If it had been two firsts, I think people know, well, I don't know about that. But with four firsts, I think
it's all unprotected,
like,
is worth.
And unprotected, yeah.
Worth mentioning there.
Yeah. I think it's. I think it's enough of a haul that it was like, well, you know, I would have done that too. And I sad to see him go, but I think it's a good deal, of course. And this isn't exactly a novel thought. It now is incumbent on them to use those picks and that flexibility to find a collection of players who will be better than Desmond Bane. I don't think it's likely they will find a player who is better than Desmond Bane, but can they find a collection of players who raise this team ceiling, you know, higher than Desmond Bane alone could? I think that's the hope.
Now, the general idea, and I tend to believe this is the way you do it in the NBA now, but the general idea behind taking that Desmond Bane $40 million or $39 million, whatever it was, and cutting it up into multiple contracts, sort of mid-level contracts, you maybe have a $20 million and a $15 million and a $7 million, whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
I think most people tend to think that's the right way to go about it. Are you sold that that's the right way to go about it? Balking at the idea of having that big three, sending off Desmond Bane, cutting those contracts into smaller but effective role players.
Yeah, I don't even know what the other way would be. Like, the other way would be to bundle them together and go get another.
Or to potentially, you know, to potentially keep Desmond Bane and still try to build.
Once they did it, it's clearly what they're going to try to do.
Right,
is,
right. But
yeah.
Is the correct way,
right.
Or is it, you know what I mean? Like,
you could have imagined, if you could imagine a player, you know, if instead of Desmond Bane, the third player was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
you can imagine that a third great player would be great, right? I don't actually think it's impossible with the right three great player, highly paid players to do what you want to do. I think the problem is that as good as Desmond Bane was, he wasn't good enough to be that, you know, to justify that. And so, then you're stuck. And yes, you have these contracts and now you can keep, deal, whatever, package. And it creates all kinds of flexibility. for you to go, you know, to go do something. But, and this is just true. I mean, I like the trade. I would have done the trade. But now Zach Kleiman has to do something that he has really not done, which is acquire good quality established players, you know, who will make the team better. He did when he got Steven Adams. Like, that was an actual brought in a established player swap. Now he sent out Jonas for that one. And he's been very good at finding hidden gems, you know, the Scottie Pippins or certainly in draft picks, but making deals to bring in a players who are going to elevate this team is a place where we haven't seen a lot of success yet from this front office. And that's obviously what they have to do.
Now, thoughts on the players that came back in the Desmond Bane trade? I think if you just look at those guys in a vacuum, you know, better role players than they had the past 2 years. Like, I think we can agree on that. But when you look at Cole Anthony, when you look at KCP, what do you think about the player assets that they got in return for Des?
I mean, they're definitely worse today than they were when they traded Desmond.
Absolutely.
There's no question about that. You know, I don't think anyone really thinks Cole Anthony's going to be on this team.
Sure.
You know, but he'd be, he helps. We, you know, one of the needs, a lesser need, but one of the needs was another ball handler. Like, if he is on the team, it won't be a disaster. But I think given his role, given his salary, I think the assumption is that he will be packaged with a pick and they will try to move him. I think the assumption with KCP is he'll probably be on the team. I think both of those things would be betting odds. I would bet that Cole Anthony won't be, and I would bet that KCP will be. And obviously KCP is, you know, won a title in Denver where he was terrific. People screamed at Denver when they let him go, and yet he was not all that in Orlando. He shot 34%, I think, in Orlando. So, but he's a good player, and I think he has the reputation of being a team leader guy. You know, who can do some of what Desmond Dame did in the locker room. So, obviously, you know, good solid players, and I do think that's part of this. It wasn't just that they got four firsts; they got four firsts and two players who aren't just anchors. You know, they aren't just like, you got to take this dead weight, which you're going to hate having on your balance sheet. They're actually good NBA players. So I think that's the other reason it feels like quite a haul.
Yep. Now, there is a perception about this trade, I guess, in the national media, and we already sort of covered it, where, okay, are the Grizzlies going to have John Jaren out there? If you listen to any of the good reporting on it, those guys aren't up for grabs. Right, just because Dez got traded does not mean that they're blowing this thing up and going to completely rebuild, go through the draft, go through all that. But, you know, is it as easy as to say just, okay, this is small market, we've always done this, we try to get good players out of small markets to big markets, or is there something deeper there? Like, why do you think that is the perception at a national level? That, okay, now this is a rebuilding trade, they're going to blow it up.
Well, I think two things. First of all, I really do think that for whatever sad reason, the NBA is a league where the transactions are more interesting than the games to people for some reason, right? You know what I mean? Like it has just become this transactional league. And so I really do think that any time there is a chance to talk about a superstar getting traded, even if it doesn't seem likely or doesn't seem the direction that the team wants to follow, they're going to do it. Like, that's what people want to talk about. Like, as soon as the Knicks lost, like, it's Cat out of here. Is he going to go with KD? Is, like, you know what I mean? That literally the night that the Knicks were bounced from the playoffs is, can they trade? I was, you know, on very good podcasts, I was reading, could they trade Cat in a deal for KD? You know what I mean? Like, people like to talk about transactions, even if they're grounded in nothing. So I think that's part of it. The reality here, though, is that, well, it is very clearly, I think, their plan to build around Ja and Jaren. There are two contract situations that will have a bearing on this as early as this summer, possibly, right? And one is, obviously with Jaren, they want to renegotiate and extend his deal. If Jaren, and I don't think this is likely, but if Jaren came to them and said, hey, you know, I don't want to renegotiate and extend my deal, and I'm going to go to free agency next summer, and we'll see, but I want to explore my options. I think then the Grizzlies would have to explore trading him,
sure,
right? And that could happen as soon. And with Ja, I don't think this is true. He's under contract, but he's also eligible for an extension. if either the Grizzlies, and this is the way Chris put it on my show today, is if either the Grizzlies or Ja wanted to get an extension, and if either the and the other party did not, right, did not want to do it, could that cause some friction that would then again lead to a, you know, a separation? Whether the Grizzlies wanted him to extend and he didn't want to, or he wanted an extension and they didn't want to. Like, so there are two pressure points on each of these players that could result in, okay, we don't want to break, it's not what we wanted to do, but I guess we have to now. And the good thing about the Desmond Bane trade is it works either way. Like, they very clearly want, as I said, they want to build around John Jaren. And if that's what they want to do, this enables them to go out and get pieces around John Jaren. If, on the other hand, if something goes badly awry, and they decide they do have to move and break it up, and again, I think that's the much less likely course, they're also in a good position to do that now. You know, they got lots of assets for Desmond Bane and whatever else. So I don't think this deal predetermines the course they'll take or eliminates the chance that they could take either of those courses. I think they are likely, and their desire is to build around these two stars. But things happen. Like when they traded Shane Battier for Rudy, the pick that became Rudy,
right,
they wanted to still be good. They still had Powell on that team. They wanted to still be good. And then it was a terrible year. They won 22 games. Mike Fratello got fired. Powell got traded. You know, they wanted to be adding a young player in Rudy to sort of add new juice to that aging team. It went another way. And so I think reality will determine what happens next, but obviously their goal is to continue to be good.
Yeah, I also want to thank the Grizzlies for making this trade for Summer Sports Talk Radio for the 16th overall pick. Thank you for that.
So much.
Appreciate you.
The home
thanks
exception
for your service.
Had a limited appeal. I mean, literally, all we were talking about was the home exception, and now you got a draft to talk about.
We can talk Nick Clifford. We can talk Cedric Howard.
Things.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
The best.
Thank you, Grizzlies.
The best.
Thank
yes.
you, Grizzlies. From Jeff
Father's
and I.
Day, though.
Say
kind
it again.
Screwed up Father's Day, but
yeah.
It's worth.
Oh yeah, how know? Was your Father's Day? Good.
I mean, mine was fine. I was literally in a mountain town in Colorado, eating a burrito when I found about this deal. Had I still been a full time sports columnist, I would have had to drop everything that I was doing, like Drew did as he was at Wrigley Field with his dad, and write something. And so I think it was very inconsiderate of Zach Kleiman to do this on Father's Day. But given that the gift that is now the summer of interesting transactions to come, I will forgive him that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again soon.
Yep.
That is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X. Daily Memphian columnist, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Now, Pete Thamel and Kyle Bonagura from ESPN wrote an interesting report about realignment. There was a full section on the University of Memphis. I'm sure people have seen it by now. But how should you view Pete Thamel's latest realignment report on Memphis? I'll tell you on the other side. ESPN, Pete Thamel and Kyle Bonagura, both college football writers and insiders, wrote a report on Sunday about potential realignment and another wave that could be coming soon. The Pac-12 has to get whole. Big 12 and ACC still may be looking into things, although the ACC less likely with Florida State and Clemson dropping their ongoing suits. But amid or in this article, Pete Thamel and Bonagura both came together and wrote about the University of Memphis. Now, one thing that should be positively taken from this is both of them acknowledge, as well as the sources that they talk to, Memphis may be the biggest domino around the country when it comes to conference realignment. The success in basketball, the success in football as of late have definitely pushed them into a different tier compared to their peers. So I think that is something to take. Now, I want to start by saying I understand Memphis fans' plight. I am one. I went to the school. I played football there. I played in a bad conference, although it was better when I played. We still had Cincy, UCF, Houston. I understand all of these things. And I also understand the promises that have been there in the past that have not come to fruition. And I understand the elders in the Memphis fan base are jaded. It makes sense to be. I can't blame you for being jaded. I can't blame you for seeing all of these reports and completely throwing them to the side. Because what we have seen in the past, Big 12 came calling. Here's a FedEx sponsorship on the table that could have gotten University of Memphis into the Big 12. That got passed up on by the Big 12. A couple of years ago, you have Brett Yormark visiting the city of Memphis. He says he never visited the city of Memphis. Got our hopes up then. Nothing happened. The Pac-12 last year, there was potential to leave for the Pac-12, get into that conference. I know there was no TV deal. I'll elaborate on that more in just a bit and why you need to, drop that anger for Ed Scott not wanting to make that move then. But that didn't come to fruition. Like, I understand where a lot of the people in the Memphis fan base are jaded by what has happened in the past when it comes to conference realignment. So I wanted to make that clear. But within this story from Pete Thamel and Kyle Bonaguirre, I want to read this excerpt. I want to read it. Among other things, this is what he had to say. Pac-12 officials have discussed, per sources, Memphis coming on as a football-only member. This idea was made public in reports in the fall by USA Today. The rest of the athletic department sports would go to the Big East. This would allow Memphis to maximize basketball revenue against strong competition and save the travel of non-revenue sports going out west. The calculus in Memphis's decision-making will depend on a myriad of factors. That includes the amount of media deals in the Pac-12 and what happens with the league's mediation with the Mountain West. So, later in the article, Thamel mentioned 27, 28 is a good sort of starting point to when these moves could potentially happen for the University of Memphis. I will say this, I know the fan base, a lot of our elders, jaded by what has happened in the past. I viewed this article in nothing but a positive light. And there's three reasons why I really view this in a positive light. I'm going to start first. What is very clear from reading that article, and this is not just speculation, this is informed reporting, this is people that have higher up positions in the Pac-12 and the Big East and the University of Memphis that are sourcing this article to Pete Thamel and Kyle Bonaguirre. So first, it's very clear to me that the University of Memphis does not long for the AAC. They don't want to be in this conference. They share the same sentiment that you have about this conference. 6,500 showing up per home game for a University of Memphis basketball team that was 29-6 and a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament is not enough. They're bleeding money. They realize how quickly they have to move. They're coming up with unique and inventive ideas and ways to get away from the American Athletic Conference. Those ideas are being explored in a big way. Not just behind the scenes at the University of Memphis, these are actual lines of communication being opened. And that gets me to number two. The lines of communication are clearly open. USA Today, Dan Wolkin reported a couple of months ago that the Big East and the University of Memphis had discussed being together in some way, shape, or form. Obviously, there's no football in the Big East, so football would have to go elsewhere. But the sourcing of Olympic sports and basketball and everything else going to the Big East, that has been a line of communication that has been opened. Also, being reported by USA Today and ESPN, the Pac-12 and the University of Memphis have discussed the football-only idea. So, the lines of communication are open. That's a positive thing. And then, This is my opinion, and this is where I may lose some of you. Totally recognize that. Because I think the question that's being asked now is, Memphis had an opportunity to go do this. Pac-12 sent an invite over. They said no. There's the exit fee and all that. We understand that. It would have been for all sports, blah, blah, blah. Why didn't they do it then? The University of Memphis, while opening the lines of communication, while finding inventive and unique ways to get out of the American Athletic Conference, what I do like is it's very clear to me they're trying to act financially responsible. If they would have made the move last year to the Pac-12, one, it would have been all sports. The amount of money bled into sending tennis and sending golf out to the West Coast however many times a year would have been a ridiculous financial strain on the University of Memphis. But even more so, the University of Memphis did not want to hop into a Pac-12 that didn't have any media rights deals struck. There was no promise of real revenue. They didn't have TV partners. They hadn't even got to the table. So now, when you look at the situation and you look at that drop date of 2027 or 2028, the Pac-12 will have figured out an eighth member for football. They will have struck a deal in football. You will know the Big East deal in basketball. You will know the Pac-12's deal in basketball. And you'll be able to decide, is this a financially responsible deal for us to leave the AAC with? I think, based on what I have been hearing, based on the reports that have come out, at that point, depending on the exit fee and everything else, it will probably be financially responsible for the University of Memphis to go football only with the Pac-12 and send everybody else to the Big East. And think about the home attendance that you would get. Instead of Rice and UTSA, you have Boise State and San Diego State coming in, and Oregon State and Washington State in the Liberty Bowl and Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. Imagine the difference when you go to the Big East in basketball, and instead of playing, again, Rice and UTSA for a home game on a Tuesday night, UConn's coming in, St. John with Rick Pitino's coming in, Creighton's coming in. The differences in the way this thing could look in a couple of years are massive. And I think, based on all the reporting that we have seen, you should take a little bit of positivity in the direction Ed Scott and this entire athletic department want to move. They're being unique. They've opened lines of communications, and they're trying to act financially responsible on the part of the University of Memphis and the entire athletic department.
To your point, it just feels like the first idea when it comes to conference realignment for Memphis that actually makes sense.
And it's plausible.
That it's viable. This is a viable plan. Football only to the Pac-12, and then everything else goes to the Big East. That makes all the sense in the world. It makes sense for basketball, and it makes a lot of sense for football. I think you put basketball in a conference where it can thrive. You're playing better competition. You get butts in the seats at the FedEx Forum. And then the same idea for football. It wouldn't make much sense for football to go to the Big East. It wouldn't make much sense, in my opinion, for basketball to go to the Pac-12. If you split those two, one's in the Big East, one, and then you just have football in the Pac-12, that makes sense for Memphis. I also think that the timelines make sense as well, because it sounds like 2027, 28 would be about when this would happen.
Yes, and here's the other thing that makes it more real than it has been in the past. The Pac-12 has told you on multiple occasions they want you for football, mm-hmm. at the very least. They have sent an invite, although that's not how they're going to say it. They wanted you to join the Pac-12 last year. So you know that the Pac-12 covets you. Also,
you have more
with the Big East, I know we talked to David Cobb yesterday. He may disagree with us a little bit, but I disagree with him on this. The Big East has shown interest and opened those lines of communication. They covet you for basketball. They think that you're a good enough brand to jump in and immediately compete at a decent level. And you've played UConn in the past. There's some history there. There's something there that they can really lean on. And on top of that, you have coaches. The coach, really, in the Big East, Rick Pitino, came out, I don't know, what was it, 3-4 months ago, and said, I think that Memphis would be an unbelievable addition to the Big East. They should do it today. So that's what makes this more real than it has been in the past, what makes it more viable. You know that you are being coveted and really taken seriously by the conferences that you could potentially align with. The Big 12 stuff, the ACC stuff, that was more of a pipe dream. That was more of a thought out there while they were sort of checking their, crossing their T's, dotting their I's, seeing if they really wanted Memphis in their conference. There wasn't that overwhelming idea that we want to take in Memphis tomorrow. I think both of these conferences, the Pac-12 for football, the Big East for basketball, they really like the brand that Memphis is in both of those sports.
He was advocating, Rick Pitino was advocating for Memphis to join the Big East in February.
Yes. So that's what makes this more real and why you should take some positivity. But I still do understand the elders of us in the Memphis fan base, the Memphis community. I get where you're jaded. I get where you have to see it to believe it. Understand.
This one just, I think, has the least amount of risk involved for Memphis. Where when the Pac-12 happened last year, it just felt so risky. We wanted it. You wanted to be in a better conference. You wanted to get out of the American.
But as a fan, you don't think about the financial implications of making that move. You think about Boise State coming to the Liberty Bowl. You think about you know, those types of things. You think about what are the matchups you're going to see in conference in FedEx Forum. That's what you think about as a fan. You don't think about the financial implications of all of the trips you're going to have to take for all the sports and the exit fee and where you're getting that money from.
That part. What I think when the Pac-12 came a-calling, it is easy to get enamored with them because you're just thinking about the major sports. And then you have to take a beat and consider the finances and what it would cost to send all the Olympic sports across country constantly. It didn't make sense geographically for Memphis to be involved with all of their sports.
Yes.
Just football, that is viable. Those finances make sense. I also think now you will have more information about media rights deals.
Yes.
You will have more information there.
Responsibility.
Where it was a complete crapshoot when the Pac-12 came calling the first time. It makes way more sense for Memphis. You have more information. And it's one of those situations in which we said when Memphis had to turn down the Pac-12 like the first time, that didn't mean they said no forever. They just said no to that specific moment. But if they call and said you up, Memphis would answer.
And it feels like that call has come in, but we may have to wait a couple of years before all these wheels get turning and things start happening. Also, very much worth mentioning, I completely understand this. You completely understand this. This is not the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is not to be in the Pac-12 for football, in the Big East for basketball, and every other sport. The ultimate goal is to get into the Power Four for all sports.
Right.
ACC, Big 12, whatever that looks like. But I think in the meantime, when you're trying to share revenue with your players, when you're trying to build up as much of your fan base to get back into the FedEx Forum, to get back to Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium, when you're trying to generate as much revenue as possible, this is a good sort of intermediate, in the meantime plan while you continue to figure out if those conferences will ever want you.
Don't let perfect get in the way of good.
Absolutely. 100%. Now, Small Talk is on the way. Make sure you stick around right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, fastest man in the world, Noah Lyles, the gold medal winner from the Paris Olympics in the 100-meter dash. He's canceled his much-anticipated showdown with Miami Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill due to what he called personal reasons. Hill, of course, challenged Lyles to a 50-yard race days after Lyles had won gold in the 100 meters at the Paris Games. And this is what Lyles had to say to reporters after announcing that they were canceling. "We were deep into creating the event. In fact, it was supposed to happen this weekend. Unfortunately, there were some things, complications, personal reasons, that it just didn't come to pass. But we were full on. We were going to shut down New York Times Square and everything. It was going to be a lot of fun." Now, this actually comes not too long after, I believe, last Friday, Tyreek Hill ran a 100-meter prelim at 10.15 seconds. So I don't know. I will say it seems like Noah Lyles is ducking a tad bit. Now, I would, if I was him, never do this race. You're sort of getting in your own way, putting yourself in harm's way by letting a potential, you know, a wide receiver in Tyreek Hill potentially beat you or stay close with you in a race. I don't see the upside of even running it. But the fact that last Friday you had a 10.15 in a prelim for Tyreek Hill, who is a track star, and today you have an announcement of canceling due to personal reasons and no reason beyond that, feels like a bit of ducking from Noah Lyles, who talks a lot.
He should show up to the flag football tryouts.
Can he catch? I wonder. get him some stick'em. But I think he's ducking. Can't talk that much and then duck, though, Noah. You got to be careful about that. You don't get your own shoe doing that, which he's called for. So, just saying. All right, hour number three is on the way. And opening up hour number three today, per normal on a Tuesday, is Christian Fowler. Make sure you stick around. Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.